Let's check in with golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
Whoa, John, what are you playing?
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know, I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. That's Daly. Moto Casino, hands down, has the best VIP experience. Take it from one high roller to another. If you're ready to go for the greens with me, grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Sebastian Smee, his new book is Paris in Ruins, Love, War, and the Birth of Impressionism. Our hero and heroine, Edward Manet, the Impressionist painter, Bert Morisot, the Impressionist painter. However, they have childhoods that are influential. We've talked about Bert, a painter, because her mother gave her lessons, and she's very good at it, and she paints things around her, including her sister. But Edward, where did painting come from with Edward? Well, he's supposed to be at sea. He's supposed to be a lieutenant by now. That didn't work out, and why not? But there was a year in which he was going to give one more chance to pass the examination to get into the Navy, and he sailed to Rio in 1848. A romantic voyage, except for what was going on back home. Sebastian, the year of 1848 is the rising against monarchies and empires that fails. What did Edward take from that on his voyage out of the crisis, but reading about it in Rio? What did he see in Rio? What did he think when he came back of what was emerging, which was a momentary republic and then another monarchy, Napoleon III? What were his thoughts?
Well, the key thing to understand about Manet, apart from his radicalism as a painter, is that he was a passionate Republican, you know, small R Republican. He was anti-autocratic. And yeah, that is rooted in his experiences as a young man. He witnessed this uprising, as you say, against authoritarianism and against monarchies around Europe of 1848. He was this, you know, the son of well-off, well-established family. His father was a judge. And, you know, they owned property, they had plenty of money. So in some ways, it's surprising that his politics weren't conservative, but he did experience as a young man not only all of the tumult of 1848, which he found inspiring, but also the coup of 1850-51, when Napoleon III breaks down this sort of Republican revolution and seizes power and reintroduces authoritarianism to France. Now, that deeply upset Manet. He was just passionate about democracy. He really wanted France to be a democratic republic. And, you know, he'd had this experience, as you say, where his parents wanted him to get into the law. He preferred art, but he went along arrangement, which was to go on this, you know, to get into law via the Navy. That was the idea. And to do that, you had to take this trip across the Atlantic. And he did that. He went to Rio. He witnessed slavery at first hand, and it disgusted him. And that added to his, you know, passionate politics. And when he got back and saw Napoleon III seize power, he really loathed that whole thing. And Napoleon III was in power for the next two decades. And throughout that period, as he established himself as a painter, Manet became more and more, if you like, active. He became a kind of activist. There are many paintings that he made which are explicit protests against the policies of Napoleon III. And there is a democratic sort of impulse through all his work, you know, and that's something that influenced all the other Impressionists. There's no question about it.
There's a scene that Sebastian gives us with Bert, who cannot go out at night and join in the revelry of being young in Paris. From her balcony, looks out across the city, and she knows in that direction is a cafe where Edward and his pals all gather to be smart and young and excited, but they're excited Republicans. I did not write down the name of the cafe, Sebastian. Can you help?
It's the Café Gabois.
Gabois. And they talk revolution, but not violent revolution. They talk republic. One of the people whom comes to the soirees, the salons, either at the Morisots or at the Manets, is a man named Leon Gambetti. Who is he, Sebastian?
He becomes a friend of Manet, Leon Gambetta, he's sort of the leading Republican of that time. And, you know, he and Manet used to meet up at some of the cafes, not just the Gabois, but around Paris, and discuss politics. Gambetta is still a young man, but he makes his reputation as a lawyer, delivering fiery speeches against Napoleon III. And he becomes a key figure in the book because he's a sort of a beacon, if you like, to all the other Republicans. But there is this tension in the politics of the moment because, you know, it's split in all these different directions. You have people who support Napoleon III, who's in power. Then you have people who would rather France return to being a monarchy, and either an absolute monarchy or a constitutional monarchy along the lines of the English model. And then you have the Republicans, but even they split into two groups. There's the moderate Republicans, and then there's the radical Republicans. And Gambetta is pretty much a moderate Republican. But a lot of Paris is quite radical, and they want a more radical system of government, and they want it to happen faster, and they're prepared to be violent to get their ends. So these are the kinds of forces that Gambetta had to juggle, and I think he probably discussed all these things with Manet when they met up.
I know we're supposed to be talking about Impressionism, but it's impossible to avoid the politics of the moment because it's not outside of the Impressionists. They understand themselves to be revolutionary painters challenging the established order. You see how easy it is to move from geopolitics to painting and back to geopolitics. So there's another man, I believe, who attends some of these salons, some of these gatherings, Thiers. Is that right? He said they all meet each other at the houses as well.
Right. He's a friend of the Morisots, and I haven't been able to get paper evidence of this, but certainly in the biography of Bert Morisot, it says that he was actually a witness at the marriages of two of her sisters. At any rate, he's close to the Morisots, and he shares their politics, which is not republicanism, but a kind of, that he favors the constitutional monarchy model. He's not an absolute monarchist, but he really admires the way that English system works, and he would like that to be established in France. So, you know, at first, Adolphe Thiers and Gambetta, the Republican, you know, one of them being a friend of the Manets and the other a friend of the Morisots, are at odds, and they both have a different idea for how France should be. But there's an irony, which is that they end up being the two who guide France towards being a republic. But that's 10 years later on. But it is just important to note, as you say, that the politics are intertwined with these artists. And I think, you know, we look at Impressionism today and we think there's surely nothing political about these paintings of landscapes and flowers and so on. But in fact, all of the Impressionists, were Republicans. They were written about in Republican journals. They were written up by Republican critics. And there is a clear link. And people who first saw their work associated them with the radicals who were against, you know, the government of Napoleon III and even of Thiers, who became president after the events we're about to discuss.
Yes, it's hard to believe that this actually was all economy of scene, that we get all our major players in salons drinking tea and drinking wine, but that's the way it happened, so we have to tell the story historically. Now, Napoleon III is cruel and straightforward and haughty, believes that he has divine right because he's the relative of Bonaparte. And he launches into a confrontation with the then nascent German duchies, the spread out parts of Germany that hadn't cohered yet. And he takes on Bismarck and von Moltke and the German army, the Prussian army. The French army is not beloved by Napoleon III. The Kaiser, Wilhelm, he will now be called the Kaiser as they're cohering all of Germany, loves his army. And the War of 1870 doesn't have a profound reason to have existed. It just did. And the presumption was the French were going to roll over the Prussians and be supreme. They were the center of the universe, at least since the 16th century. It didn't happen. And our hero and heroine and all of the hero's friends watch Napoleon III crash against Bismarck and Moltke and fail. And my impression, Sebastian, is that they celebrated his failure and were eager to have him humiliated. But I don't know that they imagined what was going to happen to Paris. Did they talk about it that way?
You're right. It's such a complicated situation. But yes, they were so against Napoleon III that they were patriotic, and they certainly didn't want France to be crushed by Prussia, which is what was happening. But when Napoleon III lost on the battlefield at Sedan, this was the defining battle that really signaled France's defeat by the Prussians. When he surrendered and went into exile, a republic was declared back in Paris. And this, of course, was exactly what Manet and the other Impressionists and Gambetta had been hoping for so long. So the circumstances weren't ideal. They were in a lot of trouble, and Paris was just about to be surrounded by German troops. But the fact that a republic had been declared filled them with enormous optimism. And they still had this idea that France was ultimately a dominant military power. And it was just a little unfortunate that they'd suffered a few defeats by upstart Prussia on the battlefield, and that everything would turn out okay. Within Paris, pretty much the entire male population joined the National Guard, including Manet and Degas. The city was turned into a sort of giant military barracks. Food and other supplies were brought in from the surrounding countryside just ahead of the Prussian siege. And the feeling, as I say, was incredibly optimistic. They felt that they would be able to break out through the Prussian lines just through sheer force of numbers coming from within. And they hoped that the French army that had sort of was in disarray, having been defeated on the battlefield, would reconstitute in the country and come back and beat the Prussian siege lines from without. So there'd be a sort of dual attack that just needed to be coordinated. And in this way, the Germans would be defeated. But of course, that's not what happened.
January 1871, several defeats and a surrender. The negotiation of the surrender will be humiliating. 5 billion francs by 1875 must be paid by what remains of France. And our heroes, now knowing the war is over, mourn the loss of two painters, Bazille and Regnault. Is that how I say his name? Henri Regnault.
Yes.
Who won the 1869 Salon with Salome. Do I remember that correctly?
It's correct, yeah. He won the prize for best painting, yeah.
So at the notice how Sebastian has arranged history to tell a story. So that the winner of the Salon, the orthodox winner of the Salon, dies on the battlefield. The Impressionists now mourn him, and one of the men showing at that 1874 exhibit where Impressionism is born is a man named Sisley, whom I meet for the first time in my life, thanks to Sebastian. He's a gorgeous landscape painter, and he painted a scene on the Seine where the battle had been, but he didn't put in the battle and the blood. He just painted the picture as it looks before and after the battle. And yet everybody knew what that place was. Is that correct, Sebastian?
I mean, one of the amazing things to think about is when we look at a lot of these Impressionist landscape paintings, a lot of them are on the banks of the Seine, just to the west of the city, because that's where some of these artists spent a lot of their time, not just Sisley, but Pizarro, Renoir, Monet. And those same locations, not every one of them, but many of those locations had very recently been the scene of terrible bloody battles as the Parisians tried to break out through the French besieging lines, through the Prussian siege line. And they got knocked back again and again. Thousands were killed. And these battles took place on the banks of the Seine. So, yeah, when people saw those landscapes, they would have recognized where they were, and they would have connected them with that very recent and traumatic history. So to us, they're just pleasant pictures. But you know, in one of those paintings, I'm not sure if it's the one you're referring to, John, but there is a painting of saplings on the banks of the Seine. Now, they were saplings because the actual trees had been devastated and sort of cut down by bombardment and perhaps for firewood during the siege. And then replanted. And that's why they were just saplings at that time. And I think contemporary viewers would have seen all that. So although they weren't explicitly paintings of warfare, they were very much connected with what they had all just been through, this terribly traumatic time.
And it's about to get much worse. Paris in Ruins, Love, War, and the Birth of Impressionism. Sebastian Smee is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Let's check in with golf legend John Daly.
I only spend on Moto, America's social casino. You know, I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. That's Daly. Moto Casino, hands down, has the best VIP experience. Take it from one high roller to another.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
If you're ready to go for the greens with me, grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.